This is the ColoradoHockey.com podcast brought to you by AbsFam. ABSFAM.com for the coolest hockey shirts you can't find anywhere else because they're not available anywhere else. Check out the Dutchie, the Landy, the EJ, the Picks, the Varty, the Skilly, the Mac, and so many more. AbsFam.com. Today is a special day because we're having a conversation with a man named Dan Price. Dan Price and his team created what we all know today as the Avalanche logo. And in 20 years, it hasn't changed at all because it is that awesome. It is the thing that we all gather under. It is the thing that brings people together who wouldn't otherwise have conversations together, who wouldn't otherwise cheer together. The Avalanche logo is probably the best in the business. And the only thing that we got when we asked for questions for Dan Price were conversations about, please don't change that logo. We love it. It doesn't need a redesign. This is what we want. We love it after 20 years. Be forewarned, my friends, this won't be 100% about the Avalanche. Of course, it's going to be about hockey and it's going to cover the Avalanche, but it covers some of the other logos that he's done for a number of major prominent teams. Dan Price is a ninja, a master, and he brings along a style that is timeless and classic. There's no fadness whatsoever. This is something that will be cool in 20 years, something that's going to be cool in 30 years. But before we get too far...
Yeah, you shout out to the AVS fam. Colorado hockey's coming in, man. Let me teach you how to Dutchie. On the ice, the Dutchie touch. Hashtag volley volley. The crazy saves this so gnarly. The Condor and Landy. Team Butte is sweeter than candy. Colorado hockey's coming in. Colorado hockey for the win. Tune into the podcast, we're live. Colorado hockey has arrived. ColoradoHockey.com.
Any given season, we will celebrate the 30 to 35 players that touch NHL ice for the Colorado Avalanche that year, but there is so much more going on that most people don't know about. Can you imagine being at a game without the in-game music from DJ Triplett? Check that podcast out. What about the commentary and the writing and the Twitter feeds you get from people like Mile High Hockey, Burgundy Brigade, or BSN? Check out those podcasts. We're on a mission to talk to as many of these people as we can find, the people that make it happen behind the scenes, the people who make this seamless, the people who make it fun. And today, we get to talk with Dan Price, who was the creative director of the team that brought us the Colorado Avalanche logo. In this podcast, we go deep on logos, secondary logos, word marks, design philosophy, and everything in between. Dan and I were talking shop well before we got the microphones up and running, so we picked this up right in the middle of the conversation. And to bring you up to speed on this conversation, we are asking him a question we got from AJ Haefeli about the Mammoth logo. AJ asks, did he play a role in the design of the Mammoth logo, which was clearly patterned after the Avs? If not, is it flattering?
So the Mammoth logo was a project that we were hired to handle by Kroenke Sports. So Kelly Kotcher is their creative director. She replaced me. I was the creative director with the Denver Nuggets and later the Nuggets and the Avalanche from 1990s. I started with the Nuggets in 1987, and I left the Nuggets Avalanche in 1996, December 31. So after I left, Kelly Kotcher came in and replaced me. So the Kroenke Sports and Kelly Kotcher and some of the other people over there have returned to Adrenaline for certain identity projects, including the Mammoth and including the Altitude Network logo, the television logo. So the Mammoth logo, Kelly Kotcher had concocted the idea of the curling tusk and the M for the skull. And she just asked us to take her idea and turn it into a logo. So we did work on that as an Adrenaline project. We also did the Colorado Outlaws logo for outdoor lacrosse. So yes, we were the agency that did the Mammoth logo.
So you've got a bit of a style then, because I can think of all those logos in my head and what they look like and how they work. But what are some of the things that people wouldn't expect that you have to work in? What are some of your parameters or your limits, or what do you need to consider as far as how the logo looks in black and white or in color or from far away or on a jersey? Or
you ask some amazing questions, because a lot of what you're talking about is what we preach. Okay. As an example, if you notice logos, especially in the NBA, you saw it a lot during the 90s, they were taking all of these logos and they were pillowing them out, if you will. They were making them puffy and they were making them dimensional, and it's almost like somebody discovered that you could do gradients in Illustrator and they ran with it. So you had teams like the Phoenix Suns that had a logo that you couldn't even reproduce with embroidery because it went from a gradient yellow to a gradient red. So in stitching on their jerseys, they had to literally have a line where the yellow stopped and the orange started and the orange stopped and the red started. Adrenaline has always prided themselves on doing logos that are more classic. And by classic, I mean we didn't change our ideas on logo development just because the 90s went through an evolution. We stuck to the classic two-dimensional flat type logos. And it's our belief that if a logo can't look great in black and white, it should never go to color. So in our process, we design all logos in black and white, and we don't even think about color until the logo is approved in black and white.
So when it comes to color, do you have a theory on the color story on how you decide what you're going after? And here's a loose one for me, just to give you an idea what I'm talking about. And this is maybe a little, I might be talking out of school, but the idea that basically you need something that represents a true black, a true white, and something in between. So if you look at the Carolina Tar Heels, I think they are, they have a light blue, which is in the kind of the lower end of, if you took it to grayscale, you would see it, you know, it's a real nice kind of low-level gray, but there's some other teams that go up higher with that. But either way, if you have the contrast, that one in the middle is almost what tells the story more than the ones on the end, because they're just anchoring whatever that story in the middle is. Is that?
Well, there's some reality to designing in black and white is that it forces you to use shapes against one another versus outlines, okay? So a logo that is done in color from the beginning could include two colors that when you go to grayscale or to black and white, you can't take one and make it black or make it white because it doesn't maintain the shape of the logo. So when we design logos in black and white and then you change it to color, it forces you to work with a color selection that is, like you're describing, lighter colors and darker colors. But in that breath, when we were working on the Nuggets logo, which was a recreation we did, we were there, when I say we, I always speak of the department, and the people that I worked with, but the Nuggets had the rainbow logo when I got there, and we changed it to the mountain peak and the word Nuggets underneath, which is still used today, but it's kind of been replaced with the crossing pitchaxe. But when we went to color on that, it was our intent to create a color that would almost look like black, but it wasn't black. So black kind of has this stigma about it, you know, and you think of the Raiders and there's
exactly what was in my head.
Yeah. Yep. And we didn't want that. We wanted a little bit more class. So we went with PMS 282, which on television can look very, very dark, and maybe not on the new high def televisions, you know, but back in 1990 when the logo was done or thereabout, I don't remember the exact year, but it was our intent to create an aggressive logo using a nice dark color, but not to use black. And the other conversation around the color was you often ask the people that you're doing the logo for. In that case, it was us. But when Adrenaline goes out and does logos for clients, one of the questions we ask out of about 30 is, do you want a color that depicts a region or a time in history or a city or something historical? Do you want your colors to be trendy, a la what you might have seen in Charlotte or remember when some of the teams came into the NBA as expansion teams, they were going some very trendy colors. And those colors are great for the time, but they can get out of style real quick. It's almost, if you look at cars on the street, every once in a while you see this car that's a bright lime green, and chances are it's owned by somebody who's probably not going to own that car outside of a few years. And that is why the most popular color car in America is white. And number two, I believe, is silver, because people want to buy a color that they know they won't get tired of. Logos are the same way. Another thing that color impacts on a logo is, do you want a logo to look new or do you want it to look like it's been around for a while? And in the case of the Nuggets, we could have gone with a brighter blue, a brighter red, and a brighter yellow or a gold, but we wanted colors that represented a team that had been around for, at that time, I think it was just a little over 30 years. My numbers are getting a little crossed, but I remember doing the 25th logo or the 35th logo, but we wanted a logo that didn't look like it was a expansion team logo. We wanted something that looked like it had served the test of time and something that could have a long shelf life after it was introduced.
So I think that's all really good stuff. And it speaks sort of to the authenticity too, right?
Right.
And something's been around for a while and it's still around. It's classic.
It speaks a ton to authenticity because, again, you can see trendy garment companies, trendy companies will tend to do things to make them look trendy and short shelf life. In sports, a lot of times you want to look like you've been there. Right. And people want colors that are going to be accepted and they're going to be appreciated. But you run into issues like the Miami Dolphins, where for years they were orange and aqua green, and their merchandise was probably slipping quite a bit in sales because those are tough colors to sell. So in sports identity, you always have to consider the merchandise. Not everybody can just sell merchandise off of the popularity of a team. Nebraska is a great example of that. You'll see, you know, 65-year-old men walking around in Nebraska with satin red jackets. Yep. It's only acceptable because red is the color.
Every truck in Nebraska is
right.
Red.
They wouldn't wear red. And you know, I'm going back a few years when satin was kind of a cool thing for starter jackets. But I know people that wouldn't wear that jacket if it didn't have an N on it. So when you think a color, it is very representative of the not just the team, but it's got to be something that people will wear. Miami Dolphins, and I'm a fan of theirs, that's why I know, but they added a third color to their logo about 8 or 10 years ago, which was a dark blue. And it moved them up in the rankings of merchandise sales, you know, exponentially, because all of a sudden people could wear that color. And that is really something you have to take into consideration when you are picking colors for a logo in sports, because again, it's not just representing the team. It's a merchandisable, sellable item. It's right. A fashion.
It's a big deal, right?
Look what the Raiders. I mean, those guys sell off the shelf to people that aren't even football fans.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Raiders, but I get it. I mean, they have a cult like nobody else does. And it's really an interesting thing. And especially, I think if I was you, my head would be a little bigger, or I would be out of control a little bit, because you've done something that most people can't claim to do, where you have created the bat signal for every hockey fan in the world when it comes to the Av stuff. And that's a pretty big deal, right? They might as well shine it on the clouds before a game, because everybody knows what that is and they rally around it. People who I wouldn't talk to, people who I wouldn't hang out with, they come together under this umbrella of sports, and this is sort of their logo. This is their pharaoh carved in the wall in the middle of the pyramid kind of thing. That's a lot of pressure. Whether you felt it when you made that or not, or if it's something that came to you later as you go through other ones, or if you just don't approach it that way.
Well, I don't approach it that way because, you know, my job is creative director. So I oversee a project, and there's some really good people on my team. Back when the Avalanche needed a new logo, you know, it was guys like me and Mike Blake and Sean Hunter, and Michael Beindorf was my art director, who actually concocted the sketch that was the A with the snow flown around it. So it was his original idea. You know, I started with some sketches of the full word Avalanche, with snow coming off of that. And from that came, you know, maybe he was at the same time working on an A and simplifying it. But, you know, we were all, you know, you're always naive. I mean, because as you move on, you learn more and you look back at what you knew and you're kind of like, wow, I can't believe we did that. But we worked as a group here, and then we worked with the NHL. So they had some talented people like Joe Bozak, who has his own agency now, and continues to do some amazing sports logos. David Haney was the creative director at the NHL. He now works with Joe. So it was Haney and me and Beindorf and Joe Bozak and Sean Hunter and other people from the NHL, and we were all collaborating on this project. So you never really had a chance to say, this was mine, or this is me, and this is, right. You know, and you... You go out of your way when people assume that you did the logo to explain the process. Because trust me, it's not uncommon when the logo was launched to walk into a restaurant with one of your friends, and the first thing they want to share is that this is the guy that did the Avalanche logo.
Right.
And it's like, then you got to backpedal and go, no, this isn't the guy. This is the guy that was in charge of the creative team on the Avalanche side. And there was another group that was in charge of the NHL creative on the NHL side. And we walked back and forth on concepts and designs until we finalized it.
That was one of my questions for you, is when you were done, when you finally had to press send, metaphorically, of course, mm-hmm. Were you happy? I mean, were you done? Because I've done a lot of projects where even up to the very end, I still feel like I could tweak or I could do something else.
No, there was a level of polish that the NHL brought to the table that I thought really nailed it. Between, you know, you and me and the listeners, I'm a big fan of the Avalanche logo. I'm not a big fan of the Avalanche word mark, which was a big part of the process, but it certainly wasn't as big a part as the simple shield that goes on the jersey. You know, depending on the sport, hockey logos tend to be very big shields that are, you know, 12 inches on the front of your jersey. It's a chest plate. And, you know, you don't have that in basketball necessarily. I mean, I think Golden State has it, but there's some teams that don't have the big logo plastered on their jersey at all. We think they do, but they really don't. Hockey's unique that way. So you spend a lot of time working on that primary badge versus word marks, secondary logos, and those types of things. And, you know, we also did the Coyote logo as a team at Adrenaline. Right. We went through that recreation. And you know, selfishly, I take a lot more pride in the Coyotes logo.
Why is that?
Because it was more of my responsibility as an owner of an agency that was hired to do it. So we didn't work with the NHL. We didn't work with anybody else. It was the team at Adrenaline that solely worked on that project. Now, again, solely I say that, but there was people like Brett Rogers that worked for the Phoenix Coyotes at the time that brought us into the process and certainly had some ideas that were brought to the table. But they knew what they wanted. We started off that project with a very deep level of research and which is common for Adrenaline. We never assume we know what we need to know. We go out and do great levels of great depth of research to get public opinion on what people would want to see in a mark. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that luxury with the Avalanche, but the Avalanche was unique in that it was a new logo. New logos are sometimes easier because there's nothing to compare them to. But to go in and rebrand a team like the Coyotes, then you always know that people are going to compare what you did to what they already had. And even in the case of the Denver Broncos, I heard rumor that when the new logo was introduced by Nike, you know, 80% of the Bronco fans didn't care for it.
There's still a lot of people that mash the logos together. I've seen that quite a bit, yeah. Or who just prefer the first one. But I mean, you could argue too that if people care passionately either way, you've won. If they're indifferent, maybe that's the worst possible scenario.
Well, I think when you have a new Broncos logo come out onto the scene and people are telling you that they don't like it, yes, there's a level of fanship, a level of loyalty that they have to the team, and they just can't imagine change. And I think what you've seen in the last 5 or 6 years in sports, where there's this whole retro movement and everybody's bringing back the old stuff and the probably even going further back than that, but where, you know, players and teams are doing the throwback days on the field, and it's all a move to sell merchandise. I mean, let's be honest.
It's the third jersey in hockey,
it's just the third jersey in hockey.
Although that's an awesome third jersey. Anything to do with that one from your team?
No. We didn't work on the third jersey
at all.
Have
you seen it, though?
I've seen the latest one where the one that I was familiar with was about five years ago, where it was just the Avalanche type across
right.
the burgundy
very
with
collegiate.
Very collegiate. I'm trying to think of the new one. You kind of caught me off guard.
So it's very Colorado Rockies inspired.
Yes. It has the triangle.
The triangle without
absolutely.
The ridges.
It looks like the old Rockies. It looks like the old.
There's no way they weren't going for that. And they have the big C from the flags.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clearly what they were doing, right. But they took the color story and blew it up and a touch darker. And I'm not sure why, though, now that you brought up the sort of authenticity of darker colors or more muted, maybe not as saturated.
But I think it just becomes fashion. I mean, it really is a movement just to, it's a great revenue generator, you know, and when you go to the games, how many times do you see a guy walking around in a Quebec Nordiques jersey, you know, almost kind of showing this badge of honor that he's been a fan longer than the other guy.
He's old school.
He's old school. You know, I've been a fan of this team before they came here. Or you see, you know, somebody wearing a Forsberg jersey from Sweden.
Yep.
And people are nuts for jerseys, and they're nuts for representing the history of a team on their body. So I applaud the NBA and I applaud every league for recognizing that. And not only within the sports realm, but it's become a fashion outside of sports. I mean, the NFL makes women's jerseys now that are cute and pretty and everything else with little sparkles
right.
sewn onto
catch
them.
And, right. Big yeah. LCs, and nice tailored ends.
Yeah. And you see people wearing them, you know, that probably aren't even fans. They're just really cool jerseys. And
it makes you a part of a group right away, though. You're in Absolutely. The group if you're wearing that. It's almost like a church for sports. You can go there and people accept you as long as you're wearing the right jersey.
Right. It's interesting. You're right. And I just watched a recent video. I'm trying to think of the guy's name, but he wrote the book, Ask Why, I think was the title, but don't quote me on it.
Simon Sinek.
Start with why. Great speaker. And he was talking about how, you know, if you're in a foreign country and you meet somebody and they say they're from the United States, that you just instantly form this friendship.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same in sports. You know, if you get on a crowded bus and somebody else has an Avalanche hat on, there's just a bond there, not quite to the level of cauliflower ear for wrestlers, but certainly, or Marines with their saying that they can share with one another. But there's a bond that's formed.
So I don't ride a motorcycle, but mm-hmm. I travel a lot. I see people on them. And if a guy in front of me on a motorcycle sees a guy coming the other way, they have this kind of two finger point to the road. Right. They do.
Yeah.
And I always do it in the car with them. It drives my wife insane.
Oh yeah.
She's always what? But
well, it's funny. I mean, I bike. So sometimes you see bikers and they wave to you only because you're on a bike and they're on a bike. So we must be sharing something in common or you see people that drive Jeeps, you know, and they wave to each other. It's funny how we fall into these categories.
But it all comes back around. Like if you're in a Jeep and it's bright green, you probably don't have the same respect as if you're in a Jeep that's a little beat up.
Right.
Maybe you put some Bondo on a fender or cut the fender off, whatever, right? There's some authenticity there still.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I'm a big YouTube fan. I love going and just watching how people will push themselves in a vehicle to get through a hole in Moab. To the point where they'll flip a brand new Jeep just to show some sort of courage.
Yeah.
I mean, once I drive a Jeep. It's never been on the dirt. It probably never will be. But
my understanding is they're not as reliable as people think. We're in the market for a new car. We have been for a long time, but we're like at 200,000 on this current one we have. But, you know, it's one of those things where I have to admit there's a certain part of, do I want to be on Team Jeep? If I'm thinking about buying a Jeep, like, do I want to be that guy driving down the street in the Jeep? Is that represent me? Because I feel much more Lamborghini than Jeep right now. I just can't get in that game yet.
No, it's a great point. You know, when you think about branding in a broad scope, oftentimes people think they don't really understand it. But when they're building their own brand, it's built by what kind of car they buy, where they shop for their clothes, where they live. And it's a good way to explain to people the power of branding because the minute you say to them, you know, why are you driving that car versus this car? There's a stigma that comes with it. And I will tell you with a Jeep, it was a car that, my wife just loved. And the best thing about a Jeep is not the reliability, not the gas mileage, not the safety. And I'm talking about the Wranglers, not the Cherokees and everything else, but the resale value on a Jeep in this state is amazing.
It is.
I have a 6 year old Jeep that's worth more now than what I paid for it.
And you could put that right up there with Harley Davidsons. Really.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to say Jeeps and Harleys are really the same. They're not reliable. They're not comfortable. They're not a lot of things, but they are what they are.
So if you unpack that, what's happening there? Is it because of the way it makes you feel? Is that what this all comes down to?
I think it's a couple of things. I mean, first of all, when you think of a Jeep Wrangler, when you think of a Harley, there's nothing else like it. I mean, Honda, Yamaha, Suzuki, all these bikes try to make something that looks like a Harley, and they've gone so far as to even hide their own names on their gas tanks. I mean, you'll see Hondas that don't say Honda except for on the cylinder. But nobody can give you that V rumble that the Harley gives you. And when you think of Jeep, there's no other vehicle that looks like it. I mean, Suzuki Samurai might have been the closest thing, and I'm not sure. I've been told they're amazing off-road vehicles, but nobody else makes a vehicle like a Jeep. So it's if you think of getting a new four-door sedan, you have 100 choices. But if you think of getting an off-road, all-terrain, removable top vehicle, there aren't a lot of choices.
So we press pause on our conversation with Dan Price for a minute because clearly we've meandered, we've gone down rabbit holes, and we've digressed. But this is what happens when you speak to somebody who speaks your language and it's about something you care deeply about. So we're going to bring this back to center. We're going to bring this back to something a little bit more abs with a question or a comment that we got from Grant Berry or Vote for Grant on Twitter. He said maybe the 10-year logo was a secret glimpse at what the Extreme logo was supposed to be. So not being above a conspiracy theory, I asked that question. So the Avalanche did a 10-year logo.
and it looks like an X, and it has kind of the avalanche coming around it. And a lot of people think that this has something to do with what the logo was going to be originally, because they think that the Avalanche were originally going to be the Extreme. I think there was like three different ones. I remember laying in my bed hearing about this team coming to town. I was in college, I think, at the time, just getting into college. And they're like, what do you like better, right? And I'm not entirely sure that people were even supposed to know about this yet, because it kind of seemed like the organization responded poorly to suddenly people cared about what the team name was and they had a say in it. And so a lot of people think that that X is actually what the original logo looked like when we were going to be the Extreme. Is there any validity to that?
Absolutely. I don't know if there's any connection to the 10-year anniversary logo and the original logo.
Do you know them? Have you seen them?
Yes, but okay. And you can bring one up. I didn't work on it at all, so I'm not that familiar with it. But I can tell you that. There it is. Yeah,
and this is from one of the listeners too. He wanted. So
yeah, I don't think that has anything to do with the original logo concept. I think that is truly a 10-year anniversary mark. It's funny when you do logos, you go to these websites and we oftentimes will put little hidden elements inside logos. Inside the Phoenix Coyotes logo is a phoenix. At the bottom jaw is a bird. Inside the old Invesco Field logo, we had six spikes that represented the six counties that voted it in.
Right.
So there's always these little things that you can put in there. I've been to websites and looked at logos that I've done, and people have found things in them that I didn't put in there.
You do get credit for that, right? So this isn't the exact shirt, but this is one I did for Soderberg, who plays for us. And the two little dots on the Viking helmet, that's actually the umlaut, I think is how you say it. But in Sweden, if you have an O, it would have two dots over it.
Okay.
So that kind of stuff I take credit for, but I get a lot of credit for things I haven't done too.
Yeah.
Right? And this is sort of, it takes on a life of its own, but the ownership transfers too. Like, there's a guy in here who's very concerned. He thinks you're still doing the logo. And maybe you're doing something with them, I don't know. But he wanted me to make sure, it isn't even a question, he just wanted me to make sure that you don't mess with the logo, don't redesign it, we love it just the way it is.
Yeah.
He used some stronger words, but you know, leave it alone.
You saw about the Avalanche logo?
Yeah,
I would never be a part of a redesign of any kind. I mean, if they came to us and asked us to help, then I would certainly enjoy doing that, but I don't have conversation with them. I mean, the Mammoth logo is the last logo we did for Kroenke.
You think you'll do any more for them? I mean, they have other adventures too, right?
Not necessarily. No, I don't know. I mean, the Rapids was done by SME out of New York. And I mean, I would love to do more work with Kroenke. You know, I would love to work with everybody. That's the nature of the beast. But I don't lie awake at night hoping to make revisions to the Avalanche logo. It was a time in history, and I've moved on. But
is it fair to say that you have more sports clients than you do anything else?
Absolutely. You know, when you spend 10 years in the sports world, you make a lot of connections, because everybody that works with you, for a fair amount, a fair amount of them move on. You know, they go work for the Coyotes, and now you have a new team that you can work with. So most of our work, because of when we started Adrenaline, which was the day after I left the Nuggets and the Avalanche, it was, you know, we came out of the gate with the leader in sports-specific design and marketing. What was our slogan now that I'm trying to think of it? The leader in sports-specific design or something. But it was all about being sports. And it's stuck with us, and it served us well. You know, we have other clients. We have the city of Aurora. We have Dasbach Coffee. We've worked with the ballet. We've worked with Chicago Auto. But everything we do evolves around this participatory or spectator avenue, and some call it lifestyle. But you know, we have Arapahoe Basin Ski Area has been a client of ours, an amazing mountain that we always enjoy working on. But our clientele tend to fall into a category. We don't chase hospitals, and we don't chase insurance companies, and we don't chase the real estate market so much. We do tend to stay in the sports and lifestyle, outdoor realm.
So how often are you out of your comfort zone with a project then? I mean, you've done some of the biggest ones around, right?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, even last night we were doing a city council meeting in Aurora. And when I was introduced to city council, there were four or five new members on city council through some elections in December. But our November. But anyway, there was an introduction that was interesting. I was introduced as an agency that had never done a city before. And yet here we are doing Aurora. Well, we had done some work with Longmont. I don't think I'm ever out of my comfort zone if I'm given the tools to learn the product. And by that, I mean extensive research and fact finding and getting an opportunity for the organization to download what they know. You know, we never pretend to know more about a client than they know about themselves. What we preach is that we have a process for building brands that is going to complement their knowledge of the product, and together we're going to come out with a win. So outside of my comfort zone, it doesn't often happen. Even when you pick up a client that's new to you and it's a new industry, you learn as much as you can, as quick as you can, and then you're not out by yourself. You're working with their marketing team or with their ownership group, and you know, it's a collaboration.
And with your own team, that's the beauty of it. You talked a lot about it's rarely just you. It's always, you know, a team.
Oh, it's never just me. I surround myself with some really good people, you know, whether it's top guys in research or amazing illustrators or graphic designers or writers, photographers. You know, you have your go-to people that I've worked with for over 20 years. You know, my photographer, a guy named Tim DeFrisco that I turned to. We've shot the Harlem Globetrotters together for 16 years. He was my team photographer. You know, he was my team photographer at the Denver Nuggets, at the Avalanche. I mean, we've got a history together. And when the opportunity's right, I bring him in. I've got a research guy in Ron Sellers that he and I have been doing research projects together for 20 years.
So do you mind if we unpack that a little bit? What does that look like? Because for me, I went to school, I got 2 degrees in multimedia, spent a secret life as a photographer doing things like that. It never occurred to me this idea of doing research. And when I'm talking about it, I'm thinking more kind of design thinking, where you actually really dig in and you try to understand the people and almost create like an FBI person would. You have on the wall who this average person is, like who is the person who's going to buy this shirt or who's going to wear this logo, what do they look like, where do they shop, who do they know, why do they care, things like that. Is this your world?
Yes.
Because for me, it was groundbreaking. It changed the whole way I do everything.
It really, you know, there are certain opportunities with clients where they understand the value of it. And it goes beyond that. I mean, we're realistic. We understand that there are some clients that can benefit just from our experience. So doing research for one client is a lesson learned that can be applied towards another client. So when you wrap up the 35 years of experience that, probably 33 years of experience that I have in this industry, if somebody came to me and said, can you help me build a brand? The answer is yes. But if I ask them, do you want to dive in deep and get some public opinion of your product to reassure you of the decision that we decide to go in, then we can do that too. It's surprising how, and I'll give you an example with the Coyotes. They came to us and said, we want to update our logo. We want to just do a head, and you need to come in with some concepts in order to be considered one of the agencies to work on the new logo. So for 3 days, my team here, you know, we crammed and we put together two, and I can show them to you later. It's a really fun case study.
Love to see them, yeah.
We put together two different logo designs, complete with home and away jerseys, word marks, secondary marks, a primary icon. And we put it all together. We went out to their offices and we showed them what we had done. And then I talked to them about research. And my opening line was, you know, you have 5,000 season ticket holders, which isn't great. And if we change your logo and then discover that the only reason those 5,000 people were a fan was because of your logo, then we just made a drastic mistake. Mm-hmm. So I'm not willing to take that chance. And if you want us to work on this project, then I'm going to take you down a path of assurance where we're going to interview people and we're going to find out what they like about the logo and what they don't like. And it was all done in secrecy. Nobody knew that we were changing the logo, but it was a broad interview of what type of logos do you like in sports and what type of logos do you like in Arizona? And, you know, let's talk about the Coyote logo. What do you think of it? Do you like the colors? Do you like the shape? Do you think it's busy? And when all the information came back and the research came back, we had a pretty good idea of the direction to take, but you would be shocked to see how close those original ideas are to the final mark. And we've done projects where we didn't do any research. We put together a logo, and then after the fact, the company will say, well, Dan, I have to go present this to a board, and what do I say if they tell me they don't like the logo, or what do I say if they ask how we came up with the idea? Can we do some research to justify the decisions that we've made? And the answer was absolutely we can. In one case, I said, yes, we can. So the guy had us do the research. It came out favorable for the direction that we took with the logo. Then when he went to present it, nobody asked a question. They all just loved the mark. And he was a little upset with me because we did research. And he thought it was a waste of money. And I said, no, it wasn't a waste of money. It lets you sleep and it gave you the support you needed had you needed it. But you didn't want to do it in the beginning, but you weren't comfortable presenting the logo without it in the end. So I don't think it was a waste of money at all.
I don't think so either. This is like training for a fight and knocking him out in the first 10 seconds and being upset because it didn't go longer.
Because you were trained to go 12 rounds.
I think that was this the IKEA effect. Is this what they call it? If you work on something for so long, you appreciate it more than it's actually valued at, maybe.
Well, and you know, that's an interesting, you know, when you talk about the timing, I've worked on logos where I've had clients pick a logo because they thought it took me longer to produce. And they almost don't want to pick the easy one because they don't think that they're getting their money's worth.
Right.
To me, a great logo is one that looks like it wasn't labored over.
There's something to be said for simplicity, you know? It's peaceful. When you see something that's well put together and it makes sense, and there's certain shapes too, and I don't know them well enough to speak to them, but the Avalanche logo kind of goes against what I was taught. It's very just triangle shaped. If you break it down, just draw around it, it's a triangle, where most of the things I've been taught to create, and granted, most of these are for t-shirts. I grew up in that industry.
Right.
It goes this way, where you want to taper it down because you want to kind of mimic this idea that this guy has a big chest and he's strong, and it goes this way. If you're doing a one-liner that has two or three actual lines on it and it starts short up top and goes long on the end, it just doesn't work. And these are...
Yeah, there's, you know, the biggest thing that I feel is something you have to consider on logo design is the overall proportions of it, the ratios of the design. The Avalanche is a very 3-to-2 dimensional logo.
This will work out, having it on my head. So
and
you can
it
look
works,
at it
yeah, I'm staring at it. And I love the colors on it, which aren't traditional. But if you can do a logo that's in a 3-to-2 format or a 2-to-3 format, then you can own your space. When you do logos that are too horizontal, they tend to get lost, especially when they're placed next to other logos, because nobody knows, do I make it, how big do I make it? It's really long horizontal, but I can't give it that do because then it becomes too long. So I have to make it as wide as all the other logos, which happen to be a 3-to-2 format. And this horizontal logo takes up a tenth of the space and it gets lost on the back of a runner's t-shirt or something where you see a lot of sponsor logos together.